compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
A happy good morning to all of you, and welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show. My number is 888-914-9149. And this is an unusual event this morning, and that is that we don't have phone lines jammed up the way we typically do. This is unusual. I don't know what, maybe it's a full moon or something. I'm not sure, but we have some space available. So if you'd like to upgrade and get on the program, give me a call, 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Okay, Cyrus, we were talking before the show about Squid Game. And let me set this up. I was looking, as I'm always looking, for things to talk about on the program. And I saw on Twitter a thread that started with all right, where is it? A guy on Twitter, he said this. This is what caught my eye. My six-year-old daughter says, "Daddy, I wish there were no Squid Game. Although I haven't seen this series, I can assume how terrible it would have been for some sensitive kids." And I said, 6 years old, I read a review of Squid Game. It's new on, what is it, Netflix. And it's, I haven't seen it, I don't plan to, but it's apparently a shocking, it's a game that people are forced into playing, I guess.
No,
shocking because they get killed off, like,
yes,
one after the
so
other.
So this is a classic battle royale. It's kind of like a Fortnite, but in a TV show form. Okay. Or you could say, the Hunger Games, or before that there was actual movie called Battle Royale. So this
I
is
saw the Hunger Games. I thought that was actually kind of boring, honestly.
Yeah, so this is nothing new. What's shocking about Squid Game is the gratuitous violence, and the deaths you see they're very realistic. There's just headshot after headshot. And
you mean
blood,
like,
everywhere.
Bullets?
Yes, bullets. Okay. Lots and lots of bullets. It starts off with 456 humans, and only one of them is going to survive the Squid Game.
Why is it? Okay, so I read a review of it, and it made me think that I understood the premise. But as I understand it, first of all, it sounds like it's really extremely popular right now.
Insane. It's insanely popular. Yes, my even young kids are talking about it when they haven't seen it, because it's all over their social media. So there's no getting away from it. If your kid is out in the world, they know about Squid Games.
Nice Jobin on Twitter responded to the guy who said, "My six-year-old daughter said, I wish there were no Squid Game." So the child saw this. Nice Jobin says, "Probably shouldn't let your six-year-old watch a show where people kill each other for money."
Probably not.
And then the dad, yeah, probably not a good idea. And then the dad says, "If I had known, I'd have not let her watch it. But I learned about the show from her after she watched it on her tablet."
So she has unfettered access to the whole world on her tablet.
This nincompoop of a father has allowed his daughter to have a tablet, and probably before she was 6 years of old, 6 years old. And yeah, apparently unfiltered. If she can go to that section of Netflix and watch Squid Game, then what else is she looking at? So he says in his response, he says, "Yes, it's definitely not for kids, but sometimes kids accidentally end up watching such shows on the mobile devices." Well, duh, if you give a child a mobile device at 6 years of age. Brandon says, not the Let's Go Brandon guy, but a different Brandon. He says, "I gave my kid unrestricted, unmonitored access to the internet, and she saw something she shouldn't have. What are you going to do about that, corporation? Also, posting my plan on social media for clout instead of talking to my kid about internet safety." I don't even know what he means by that. So tell me about the Squid Game. What is it that's got people so excited?
I think it's I don't know what's got them so excited. I don't know what... I watched it from beginning to end, and it felt like it had been something that I'd seen before. It was just more violent.
Is it a movie or is it a series?
It's a show. It's like 8 or 9 episodes long. It's got 456 people, and more than that die. And you see every single one of those deaths. So it's
how
just,
do they, okay.
You get numb.
How do they get into
violence.
This group? Are they kidnapped or
no,
what happens?
No, they volunteer. they are all poor and in great debt, and they have no future, and they are providing for, they're trying to provide for someone they love, or they're just trying to get out of, you know, get off a skid row.
Now, okay, where does the squid motif come in? Are there squids? Are they called squids?
No,
or why do they have that in the title?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea.
Okay.
Yeah, and I didn't care about the show enough to deep dive into what everything meant or all the foreshadowing stuff that might be happening. I
was
just
probably reading the Bible when you were binge watching Squid Show.
I hope so. I hope so, because it was a complete waste.
I was praying for you.
It was a waste of time.
I want to share something with you, Cyrus. First of all, I'm adamant, and this just proves my point. I'm adamant that parents not give their children smartphones or tablets that are connected to the internet. It's the height of absurdity. And look at this little girl, 6 years old. She saw things that probably will have scarred her. And if they don't scar a child of that age, it makes me wonder what else have they been looking at that they are not scarred by it. But I want to share a story with you, Cyrus. This happened to me when I was, I guess I was about 9. And one of my uncles, who has since gone on to his eternal reward, may he rest in peace, he at the time was, so I was 9, he might have been 15, let's say, 15 or 16. And he took me to go see a movie called The Sand Pebbles with Steve McQueen. Does that name ring any bells?
Not even a little.
Have you ever seen that movie?
Never.
Okay. The Sand Pebbles is a movie that's set in the early part of the 20th century during the, I guess, or maybe even a little bit before that, during the Boxer Rebellion in China. And the premise of the movie is Steve McQueen is a sailor on a Navy ship, a U.S. Navy ship, that is there in China supporting whatever their military operations were at the time. It is a horrendous movie. Now, let me fast forward what happened. I ran out of the theater crying. I was so terrorized about halfway through, maybe a little bit more than that. And I ran out into the lobby of the theater, and there I sat, you know, in misery, wishing I hadn't seen some of the things that I had seen in that movie. And when the movie was over, my uncle comes out and gives me a hard time. I mean, he's a kid too. He's a teenager. But I had no business being in that theater. And I think as I look back on it, what must have happened is he must have lied to my parents and told them he was going to go take me to see some other movie when, in fact, we went to see The Sand Pebbles. So in The Sand Pebbles, there are these terrible scenes of people getting horrible, like big industrial accidents that kill people in very painful ways, and people being killed by other people in very painful ways. And it was so traumatizing to me. I still, even when I think about it now, you know, I still can kind of remember how I felt as a child, and some of the images from that movie are still in my mind. And I went back and saw the movie later when I was in, you know, my 30s or 40s, because I wanted to see if it was all that bad. And it was pretty bad. So from personal experience, I wish my dumb uncle had not taken me to that movie. But like the old saying, you know, once you've seen it, you can't unsee it. It's there. So this article dredged up that memory for me. Thanks a lot, Squid Game.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep your kid. I just don't know how you're going to keep your kids away from this if you have access to Netflix. Everybody's watching it. I guarantee this Halloween, most of the costumes are going to be somewhat related to this stupid show.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids are confusing, you know, the shocking, like shock value with... Yeah.
With fun or entertainment?
With entertainment and or quality. And just because something's shocking doesn't mean it's good.
And also because something's popular doesn't mean it's good.
Yeah, that's a fact.
And, you know, I'm sure that Netflix is basking in all of this free publicity. You know, people who are outraged by it, people who are, you know, they love it, and everybody in between. It just helps them.
Between this and Chappelle's show, Netflix is killing it right now.
I want to talk about the Chappelle show, too. I've got some stuff I want to get into on that. So anyway, I guess, so Cyrus, since I haven't seen it and you have, thumbs up, thumbs down. I'm guessing it's a thumbs down, right?
Yeah, it was. It just didn't, see, where I'm from, I have seen everything, and violence doesn't bother me, and so I
haven't
wasn't,
seen the
there,
sand
there was no, I haven't seen that. So the shock value is, I see what they're doing, and it doesn't affect, it doesn't work on me, and okay. So the show was just, it wasn't good, it wasn't bad. I certainly am not recommending it to relevant radio listeners. Don't go watch this. It's just so violent. But it was. It's just there's. This will be a forgotten commodity in 5 years. People that love it right now, they really love it and they can't stop talking. They'll look back and be like, yeah, it really wasn't that good. I liked about it.
This is like the Cabbage Patch Dolls from the 80s.
Oh, isn't that
or
sad?
The Tickle Me Elmo from
that's
the
where
90s.
That's where we've come.
Where people no longer even remember those things, but they would kill for a yes, Cabbage Patch Doll
that's
in
what,
the 80s.
That's what a great comparison. That's exactly what this is.
This is a great show. What can I say? All right, so thumbs down on Squid Game. That's good to hear. And parents, please, please do not give your kids smartphones or tablets. Don't let them run amok.
Yeah, I saw you did a tweet where it's a slide. It's a children's slide that ends. Oh, yeah. It ends on a street.
Yeah, the slide empties out into a busy street. And my I don't have it in front of me, but as I recollect, my comment was, this is analogous to giving your children smartphones.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
And this guy that had his 6-year-old watch Squid Game, it's 9 hours long. You don't know what your kid's doing on the device for 9 hours?
And the poor thing, she said, Daddy, I wish there were no Squid Game. In other words, I wish I had. I think that was her way of saying, I wish I'd never seen this.
Yep.
And then there's no way to take it back. Betsy in Atlantic City, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I am just calling about the topic at hand of our media, shows, movies. I just get, my husband knows, if he's listening, he knows what I'm about to say. I get so aggravated and upset by the sex and violence in movies. And it's really because, I mean, other than the fact that it's just filling our minds with a bunch of just garbage, like terrible stuff, like I think you said, stuff you can't unsee, which isn't fair, first of all, because you're watching and you're trusting. Your mind is in the hands of the creators of the show, and then they just drop that on you or your child, and you say, wow, thanks a lot, you know?
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have wanted to see that. And then, but besides that, it's just uncreative and unimaginative. And I feel like I could write a show. I think I say, oh, I'm in the wrong business because I could write this because there's just no creativity and they lean on, it's like comedians using too much language or talking about the, you know, guttural things or whatever because they have nothing better to say and people still laugh, you know? And I just think I feel insulted because I say, wow, you think I'm really dumb because you're taking my money and you're giving me this and it makes me so mad. And I don't watch, I check out every single show. I look at the rating and I look at the parental guidance for myself.
So how is it then? Let me ask you a question. How is it then? And I agree with you. How is it then that you wind up aggravated? In other words, apparently you are seeing some movies that have got sex and gratuitous violence. So even after you screen them, not screening them, but you're vetting them ahead of time. Does that stuff sneak in that you didn't know about, or you'd say, well, I'll go ahead and watch this?
Well, I guess I should put it in the past tense because I really don't watch. I just don't bother with my time's too precious and I don't bother with it anymore. I used to try to stomach certain stuff because I thought, oh, I want to see where this goes. But the less and less that I watched of it, the less, like, I know, Cyrus, you're saying that you are sort of desensitized and that's okay. Cause I think like my husband has different tolerance than I do. Everybody draws the line in different places, but I've become so sensitized that I feel like I can barely watch anything anymore. And that's okay with me because I'd rather, I'm not quote unquote suffering. Oh no, I'm not getting to see this story that everybody loves so much. I feel, no, it's not worth it to me.
You know, I take a kind of pleasure, Betsy, in being ignorant of what everyone else is raving about. In other words, In an odd sort of way, it kind of makes me happy that I haven't seen all of these movies. So, like, you know, when the the Academy Awards rolls around and they're naming off all the different people who have, or all the different movies. It's like, I don't even know what that is. I've heard of it, but I don't know what it is. So I would say you're better off by weaning away from all that.
Yeah, exactly. Just like Game of Thrones. I mean, that
I never saw it.
Like the perfect. Yeah, and I did stop watching that. I started a few seasons. I had years ago when it was first on. When it first started, I had no idea what I was in for. And then I started to stomach it. I was like, and then I thought, no, I'm done. Mm-hmm. And I hope I'm not yelling. I'm just getting so passionate. And I think for me, okay, fine. I don't miss out. I turn these things off and I don't watch them. But I feel terrible for the people who don't think about this critically and they just sit there and they cringe through things. And I just think, like, you're better than that, you know, just respect yourself.
And I'll give you an example.
I think just,
let me give you one other example, Betsy, if I may. There's a TV show, and I forget now whether it's, I don't know if it's Netflix or if it's Amazon, but it's called Ted Lasso, and it's got, what is his name, Jason Sudeikis, from formerly from Saturday Night Live. Very funny guy. I've always appreciated his humor, and I like him as an actor. And I wanted to see this because it was, you know, highly acclaimed, and, you know, it seemed to be a very interesting premise. So Nancy and I sat down, and we watched not all of the first episode, and there was this horrible blasphemy that was uttered against the Holy Family, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. And it was uttered by one of the main characters. And it was, to me, so shocking and so abominable that Nancy and I looked at each other. You know, our jaws had dropped. And we, like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe they just said that. So we just turned it off. And I was surprised I mentioned it. I might have I did mention it on Twitter. And I was shocked at how many, you know, quote unquote, Twitter Catholic people were defending the show and saying that, you know, they thought it was a great show and, you know, that I needed to, you know, toughen up if I couldn't handle that kind of thing. So I remember thinking, I mean, you actually find that entertaining? Blasphemies against the Lord, against the Holy Family. So I think I found the reaction to my comment more shocking than anything else. And
yeah,
I guess it just, tells a tale.
I hope that one day, you know, maybe this will be the next, I'm hoping this is the next thing that we all sort of like champion for, is better content. It seems like it's already coming. There's angel videos, crowdfunded shows where people are voting with their dollars and saying, this is the content we want, not that. And so I'm just hoping that really takes off. And by the way, just thanks for all you guys do at Relevant Radio. I'm such a huge fan, and you
Thank
guys
you.
Are amazing. And my husband and I listen all day, every day. So,
oh, that's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for what you do. And because you're also putting things out there like this that help us make decisions on, you know, vetting shows and things like that. So,
fair enough. Thanks. Well, thank you for that, Betsy. We sure appreciate it. There is a great website called, I'll save that till I come back. And when I come back, I'll share with you a website that will help you know ahead of time what you're going to see, and maybe you'll change your mind about seeing it. I'll be right back.
October 14th.
Hi, Sam.
I would like to pray tonight that the man that stole my new iPad will return it.
October 18th.
The thief returned it, was found in my mailbox. He had a web browser open, and it was a picture of Jesus on it.
Do you think he was praying the rosary with us?
I don't know, but it came back
with a
full charge.
The Family Rosary Across America with Father Rocky, 7 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio.
Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Keeping it relevant. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com.
All right, we are back. We're talking a little bit, at least for a few minutes anyway. We talked about the Squid Game, which is all the rage right now. And Cyrus, in one sentence, how would you describe the Squid Game? It's people killing to win, to be the last man standing.
Yeah, if you kill everyone else, you get all the money.
Does anyone win in the end?
Yeah, spoiler alert, one person is going to win.
Okay.
Yep. Stephen King did this so long ago. The earliest version of this I've ever heard is a book he wrote called The Long Walk. And it's a bunch of teenagers that come from poorer families, and they all agree to go on this enormous walk, and you have to keep walking. And it's 100, I don't remember how many kids, it's 100 kids. And if you stop walking, there's a bunch of soldiers or people with guns driving behind you, and they shoot you dead. Hmm. And that's the story. And this is basically the same thing, just, updated.
Except that it's not kids. These are all adults.
These are adults. Yep. Okay. Most of them are young adults.
Big problem, though, that kids are watching this.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like the six-year-old that we talked about. So I wanted to interject a kind of a note, because the lady that we talked to a few minutes ago, she had some really good points. And she talked about gratuitous sex and violence. I want to go on record, go public, and say I really like the movie Tombstone, as you know, Cyrus. I really like it, and it's violence from one end to the other. It's nothing but violence, but the violence is the story, and it's historically at least it's based in some true things. So when you
isn't that a daisy?
You're a daisy if you do. I totally lost my train of thought.
I'm your huckleberry.
There we go. Okay, thank you.
Doing Tombstone, having sound effects from Tombstone to Patrick Madrid is like having a squirrel. Catnip. It's like a squirrel running across the vision of a dog.
It's like catnip, too. Yeah, I really do like the movie. I'm not ashamed to say so. And it is a very violent movie. But I guess the way I look at it is that's not gratuitous violence. And gratuitous meaning that it is unnecessary. It doesn't need to be there, shouldn't really be there, and they just throw it in anyway. And I don't like that kind of violence, and I didn't like the kind of violence that I saw as a 9-year-old when my stupid uncle dragged me to see. I say stupid uncle. I mean I hope and pray that he's in heaven. I mean that it was stupid that he brought me as a 9-year-old to see that movie, The Sand Pebbles. And any of you who have seen that, you probably can understand why it was traumatic for me as a child. But there are movies in which the violence is necessary. In fact, it is the story, like Tombstone, I would argue. So I don't mean to suggest that anything that's violent should be off limits, nor would I say that anything that is, necessarily free of violence is going to be better than something else. But it depends upon how it's depicted, I think. And you were saying a moment ago that Squid Game, which I haven't seen, and I don't plan to see it, but you were saying that it is, you didn't say splattery, but
it's shocking. It's shocking violence.
Shocking violence. Okay.
It's very graphic. It's graphic, shocking. They don't leave anything to the imagination. Every death is on full display for people to vicariously watch violence or be a part of something horrifically violent.
I hate to be Mr. Wet Blanket, and from time to time I feel like I am, and maybe this is one of those times, but I fear that there will be copycat killings from people who are that deranged that they will see this show and say, I want to do that, and then go out and try to replicate scenes from this movie. I hope and pray that that doesn't happen, but we've seen things like that happen before, and God forbid if the Squid Game thing becomes that much of a phenomenon, more than it already is, that somebody would follow through on that. Because there are people out there who are quite capable of doing that.
Yeah, sorry to say. Yeah, I hope you're wrong.
I do too. Let's go to Joseph in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Good morning, Joseph.
Morning, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Regarding this little girl that you spoke of earlier, that was just gut-wrenching to hear. Yeah. And I guess I felt prompted to call to comment on that. I don't mean to sound pious because I'm not, and I am a sinner. I have to concede that right up front. But
you're in good company then, because we're all sinners over here too.
Yeah. I'm your Huckleberry. About 15 years ago, I got rid of.
Put your mouth as close to the phone as you can because it's hard to hear you.
Is this better?
Yeah, I think it's a little better.
Okay. Yeah, I have my speaker off. I'm pulling over and I'm turning my car off. Anyway, that's as best as I can do. Is this okay?
We'll work with that. Go ahead.
Okay. But many years ago, I got rid of the television. And I'd like to use a pun right now to most of the parents out there to literally entertain the idea of perhaps doing the same. First off, just consider making a list of maybe the 10 best things that a television does for a family in a home. And then come up with another list, the 10 things that a person might be able to do that might be better for them during the time that they're watching television. What's better for their family? It's not to say that there isn't anything on television, but generally it seems like the television is, I think of it as a direct sewage line to the mind. You're just going on autopilot and you have choices, but within those choices, everything is so insidious in terms of the content. And I just think that, and no kidding, I'm going to sound pious now, but sometimes I forget that the rosary's on at 7 o'clock at night. So I set the timer on my stove a few minutes before. And I can't tell you what a grace and a blessing it is to be able to pray along with all those voices across the country that Father Rocky talks to.
Yeah. That's not pious. That's smart. That's wisdom.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought we got cut off. It's more edifying than any half hour I could have spent watching television. And I think television is literally just we're inviting. It's not, you know, I hear people complaining about the content on television as if they don't have a choice. And quite frankly,
turn it off.
The choices that you could come up with are far better than what the television wants to offer you. And it's kind of a no-brainer. It's hard to get rid of the television at first because, you know, there's a time where you're just accustomed to, you know, to being, what's the word? You know, it's a time to decompress.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you make your list of things, but I guarantee you that the list of 10 things that you can do, what is it about television that we can do that glorifies God unless we're watching the Passion of the Christ?
And you know, Joseph, at the end of your life, at the end of anyone's life, I guarantee you that somebody on his deathbed is not thinking to himself with regret, oh, I wish I had watched more television in my life. If only I had watched more television. No one's thinking that at the end of their lives.
No. And the things that we do get from television that we make up excuses for, you know, we can get from relevant radio. I get my news from Patrick Madrid. I do have a smartphone so I can go and find out what the weather is and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, the television basically orders us away from God. So
that's an interesting point. Interesting point. Oh, sounds like there you go. Well, I hear what you're saying and I admire it. I don't think too many people have the gumption that you have to just cut the cord entirely. Nancy and I did that, 6-8 years ago, I guess, maybe not quite that long ago. We just killed the cable portion. So we only have the access to like specific, like a local news channel or a national news channel, weather, things that are specific that we might want to look at. And then, of course, like Amazon Prime to see a movie or something. Other than that, we have no regular television programming in the house. And I like it that way. So that's kind of like the halfway house between people who are watching TV all the time and where you are, Joseph. I'm glad you called today. Thank you. And drive safe. Let's go to Hillary now in Whittier, California. Hi, Hillary.
Hi. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning.
I did want to give my input as a Catholic, because you were speaking earlier about the Squid Game.
Yeah.
I just wanted to give my opinion, again, as a Catholic, I thought that the show actually brought up a lot of moral questions for society.
So you saw it?
And this comes from, yes, I saw it from the beginning to the end.
Okay.
What
are some of the moral questions that it brought out? I find that interesting.
Yes, because, well, those moral questions come from the relationships that are formed between the players in the plot. And as you realize, as you know, it's a story of survival, and it's interesting because these people are at the lowest point in their lives.
Okay.
They're desperate. They have nothing. They have nobody. Some of them are even on the brink of suicide. Okay. And it's interesting because in the games, you see some players that actually sacrifice themselves for each other, and you can differentiate which characters have a moral compass and which ones let themselves become overwhelmed by greed and become like animals, literally killing other players.
That's a good point.
And then there are some players who...
Would the story have been any less impactful for you if the violence had been less gratuitous or maybe even off screen?
Maybe they could have downplayed the violence a little bit. But I kind of appreciate that the main character, he was so saddened and in such disbelief that someone can create such a cruel game that in the end, as you know, he confronts the creator, which is ironic in and of itself, the creator of the game, who is a man of extreme wealth and who's dying. And he asks him, as you know, why? Why do you create such a terrible, terrible thing, you know? And the creator admits that he's lost faith in humanity. And they
what a way to restore it. What a way to restore your faith in humanity is to incentivize people to kill each other.
But the thing is, the main player does believe in humanity, and in that last game that they play, they bet on a poor man on the street who's hungry and freezing, and the main player is betting that someone will come by and help him. And in the end, when the creator dies, someone does come by with law enforcement. And he even turns to the creator and says, like, he believes in humanity. And that's actually the next series. Is he wants to go back and disassemble and undo everything, get rid of this game, because he does not agree with it.
Let me ask you this question: is the game known to, like, are the police aware of it? Is society as a whole aware of it, or is it only the people involved in it that know about it?
There is a policeman actually who does sneak into the game. And that's
what I mean is
one of the most suspenseful.
No, what I mean is, Hillary, is this a game that is clandestine that nobody knows about except for those who are playing it? Or is this a game that people know about, or the police? I'm assuming they probably don't know about that. Is that right, Cyrus? It's not something like the
classic story of the super, super wealthy people that are tired of hunting big game. And so they buy an island and they ship a bunch of people to it, and then they hunt the people. So only the super wealthy know about the Squid Game.
So, Hillary, in retrospect, you saw 9 episodes. Mm-hmm. Would you say it was worthwhile, not worthwhile, or somewhere in the middle?
Somewhere in the middle. A little bit more towards worthwhile. And again, I'm actually not the type to, like, I don't binge on like popular shows or anything like that.
What caught your attention about this one?
Because someone was telling me about, there was a player who, and I guess if you watch it, there was a player who came from an abusive Christian background, and she, in the end, she actually understood the concept of sacrifice better than a lot of players. So that reference about Christianity kind of caught me, and I was like, I wonder if there's more to it than just, you know, like a killing spree. And in my opinion, there was a little bit more to it than just a killing spree. You have to pay attention. And I don't know if things get lost in translation because of the Korean and English, you know, but
would you let your kids
see
it?
I was intrigued by the relationships between the players.
Would you let your kids see it?
No, I would definitely, no, absolutely not. This is something I would not recommend at all for children. It's solely for adults. Yeah, and mature adults at that.
So did any of, last question, did any of it frighten you? Or did any of it leave you feeling weird after you watched it, or unsettled or something like that?
No, it did not, no.
Okay. Any bad memories of pictures in your mind of people being killed that might still linger, or no?
No.
Okay. Oh, that's incredible, because I am totally desensitized to violence, and there were moments that stuck with me. I can close my eyes and see them still.
That's what I don't want.
Yeah,
I don't want that gunking up my mental hard drive, because I know that those vivid images, the vivid memories, will be there, and they'll come out at all the wrong moments. Like when I really don't need to be thinking about that, they'll pop out.
Yeah.
So for me, it's risk avoidance. Honestly, it's risk avoidance. I have a very low tolerance for that. So my my policy is basically just I'm not going to watch it because I don't want that stuff in there.
Yeah, you should certainly stay away from the show.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Hillary. Appreciate your phone call very much and your insights. Let's take a break and come back to more of the Patrick Madrid Show. The number is 888-914-9149. We have a line that just opened up. Call it now and we'll get you on the air. 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. That extra vehicle of yours, the one you're trying to sell, you could always donate it. Proceeds bring you more of your favorite relevant radio programs. It's easy. Just call 888-906-9069.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
When we come back from our top of the hour break, I'm going to share with you a biblical response to people who say, you don't need to pray for the souls of the departed because there is no such thing as purgatory. We actually, in one of our emails that we sent out here at Relevant Radio, I don't know how many it was, four or five, six people, you know, unrelated to each other, they responded and said, you don't need to pray for the dead. There is no such thing as purgatory. So that's not what the Bible says, and I'll share with you what the Bible says on that topic after the top of the hour break. So do stay tuned for that. Let's go to Mary now in Mound, Minnesota. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. Hi, Patrick.
Hi there.
Hey, I have an analogy that I've been kind of conjuring up, and it occurred to me that maybe you could help me finish it out because it's something that I've tried to use for people who are questioning the reason why we have a mass and what's so important about it versus like any other way of going to church per se.
Okay.
And so I'm going to park my car right here. So I'll explain what I mean. And of course, now I have a frog in my throat. You know, in the movie, in the,
happens to me all the
little
time.
Short in the little short movie that they did called The Veil Removed. Have you seen that?
Yes.
I actually had an experience shortly before that aired where I was at Mass and there was a window behind the altar and there were clouds brewing behind that. So while I was kneeling, I was able to see the priest holding up the Eucharist with the clouds looming in the background. And it really felt like I was at Calvary. Like it was profound.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I'd ever realized that the priest facing away from us made more sense. And I've had a weird analogy where, so if you go to Mass and you don't know what's going on, you could liken that to going to a rock concert where everybody knows the band. Mm-hmm. They know the music. They know all the inside jokes behind it. And you're kind of sitting there looking at everyone like you're crazy. You know, why are you waving your hand that way? Or why are you dancing that way? Or whatever. Everything makes no sense because you don't know the band.
So give me the analogy.
So what if, if we were coming to Mass and with the priest facing us, so I guess what I look at it is like the priest has the backstage pass. And so he should be facing Jesus with us and he's bringing us to the backstage, like bringing us to the ultimate rock concert. I don't know how to explain that in that way.
Well, you know that you're onto a good point here, and that is that the preferred way, although it's sort of in the minority now, but the preferred way is the priest and the people facing the Lord together, as opposed to the priest facing the people. That sets up a kind of incongruous aspect of the Mass, whereas the people and the priest facing God together makes the most liturgical sense. So in any case, how would you summarize this then? So I understand that you're using the analogy of a concert or backstage pass, and you don't mean it in any frivolous or disrespectful way, I'm sure.
No, right.
So is that the analogy then?
Yeah, and I just kept thinking of you with your rock band analogies and mm-hmm. your rock song, rock band names, that kind of thing. But what hit me today is that I cannot polish it. And I thought, well, maybe Patrick could. Because I come
so
from
kind.
What Father Simon calls the Kumbaya era.
Yep,
but I also
I
know
it.
People who are triggered by any talk about going back to Latin Mass. They're like, well, we didn't know what was going on. And one person I know even said that we're nostalgic when we think about it. Because
nothing wrong with nostalgia. But the church is not a museum, obviously. So it's not like we have that the Mass is a museum piece. The Mass is ever ancient, ever new, as the church herself is. So I do see your analogy, and I think there's a valid connection there, or at least a valid parallel between the two, that if the people realized what is happening at Mass, and maybe that's where that video that you're referring to, the veil, was it the veil lifted?
Right.
Yeah. It helps people to realize by visualizing or imagining what it might be like if we could only see the angels and the communion of saints, Calvary, etc. And it's entirely true that at Mass, you are, in a mystical sense, you are made present at Calvary and at the Last Supper and in the heavenly sanctuary, for that matter, where Christ, our high priest and victim, is eternally offering himself as a propitiation for all of us. And so when somebody gets that idea in their mind and they realize that even though with my senses I can't see these things, I can't see myself there, nonetheless, I am there. That is a very powerful thing, no doubt about it.
Right.
So, yeah, I get it. I understand what you're saying, Mary. And I'm glad that you called. It's a fascinating way of looking at it. Thank you for that. Thank you. Let's go to Terry now in Illinois. Hello, Terry.
Hi, Patrick. My daughter is a sophomore at a Catholic high school in Illinois, and she was driving home with me last night and said her theology teacher was young, 24 years old. They were discussing the flood with Noah's Ark, and she said it was a symbol. It didn't really happen. So I kind of looked at her like, what? No, okay, I'm pretty sure that's not accurate. Can you help me with this?
Sure.
I'm going to probably have her just listen to your show. One of the kids was like, well, how could God do that? How could he kill all these people? She's like, oh, he didn't really, it didn't really happen. It was just a symbol. And she's like, Mom, I can't even like argue because of what she's saying. Like, I can't even make my point because she's saying it didn't even happen. So how do I help her?
Well, I would say something like this. I'd say, well, you know, that's an interesting theory, but Jesus definitely did not hold that theory because Jesus several times mentions Noah and the flood and the ark, all as historical events. So in Matthew chapter 24, for example, Jesus says, as were the days of Noah, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day when Noah entered the ark. And so he uses that historical fact as a way to describe what it will be like at the time of the second coming. So in verse 39, he says, they did not know until the flood came and swept them all away. So will be the coming of the Son of Man. So we have there, for example, Jesus referring to all three elements. So Noah as an historical figure, the ark as an historical thing, and the flood itself that killed all these people. He refers to that. And you notice that he says this referring to everybody. We see it again in Luke chapter 17. Jesus says, as it was in the days of Noah, so will it be in the days of the Son of Man. They ate, they drank, they married, they were given in marriage until the day when Noah entered the ark, and the flood came and destroyed them all. So it wasn't as though, you know, some areas got flooded and other parts of the world didn't get flooded. Jesus is really clear that everybody who was not on the ark died. Now, St. Peter takes this up again in 1 Peter chapter 3, and he talks about, he says, God waited patiently in the days of Noah during the building of the ark in which a few, that is eight persons, were saved through water. So he talks here about how only 8 people lived during this flood. And he takes it up again in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 5, where he says, Peter here saying, if he did not spare the ancient world, but preserved Noah, a herald of righteousness, with 7 other persons when he brought a flood upon the world of the ungodly. So he refers to it there as an historical event. And I think this is sufficient if your daughter is in a Catholic school to be able to say, you know, okay, that's your theory, but I'm going to stick with Jesus on this one. Because Jesus said that this is real. Perfect. That's good enough for me.
Good enough for me. I also heard on one of those shows, I don't know if it was you or not, that at one point when one of the discoverers were coming over to America, they met the Indians and they were teaching Christianity. And that was you. Okay. Yeah. And they had the story of the flood, although they had never met. The two cultures had never met, which I thought was fascinating. So I kind of pulled that out of my hat real quick while I was talking to her because I was driving. I didn't mean Bible verses to quote like you do, which I told her I'm a call Patrick Madrid. So that was fascinating. She thought that was fascinating. And that was really good. Like, I had that equipment with me, you know, at the moment to say, well, you know.
Let me refresh your memory. With this thing. And for other people who may not have heard that. So I was talking about the Jesuit missionaries who came from France in the 1600s. And there were missionaries before them as well. But they came to evangelize in the area now, which would be upstate New York and lower Canada, you know, in the Ontario area. And so they were living among the Hurons, the Mohawks, the Iroquois Federation. And they were shocked when, as they learned the languages of the people, and they began to tell them things about, like, Adam and Eve and Noah. They were shocked, and they wrote in their letters how shocked they were that the native peoples already knew about this. They knew about a great flood. Now, their details were somewhat different, so they had, you know, a slightly different way of explaining it, but they knew all about it. And these were ancient stories for these people who, as you say, Terry, had never had any contact with people from Europe, much less from the Middle East. So the question arises, well, then how did they know this? And that points to the fact that this was a real event. It really did happen. And everyone in the world at one point or another had learned this story because it was handed down to them by the descendants of Noah. It's an amazing thing, isn't it?
It is. It is.
You know, maybe one other suggestion. Your daughter could suggest to the religion teacher that he listen to the Patrick Madrid show, and maybe I can get his mind right.
It's a woman, and she actually loves this teacher. She's fantastic, you know. But you gotta pay attention to what everything they're learning because they're gonna sneak these things in there, and you gotta make sure it's accurate to the best of your parenting knowledge at this point.
True, and you know, I wouldn't be at all surprised. I'm sure the teacher is wonderful in many ways. And it may simply be that that's what she was taught. And it's there's no malice on her part. She's just repeating what she's heard.
That's exactly what I said. I'm like, you cannot blame this teacher. Like, this is what she was taught. And she's young and she's going to go through life and things are going to be revealed to her, you know, more and more truth. So I don't know. Maybe that's my role here. Who knows?
Well, you sound like a great mom and you're looking after your daughter and what she's learning at school. I think that's great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Thanks for calling. Let's see if we can get to Michael in Wisconsin before the end of the hour. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Patrick. I wanted to ask you about the Book of Revelation. I was visiting a parish far away from me on the Feast of the Assumption. And, of course, one of the readings is from the Book of Revelation. The priest in his homily was talking about how it's such a pious belief and such a good belief, but it's not really, you can't really trust the Book of Revelation because it was written like in the 4th or 5th century and certainly not by John the Apostle. And I was shocked because I think you may have shared with us that the canon of the Bible was
complete,
confirmed like in the late 300s, early 400s.
Right.
And so those dates didn't even match up. I asked him after Mass, because there was like a little social, if this, you know, if he really meant that, because he was from another country, and I thought maybe he was, you know, you know, he misunderstood something or was
no,
given
I don't think he misunderstood
he
it.
Down.
Yeah, this is a view that's held within certain circles in biblical studies, in scripture scholarship, that seeks to give a late date, very often a late date, to books of the New Testament. And the argument is that these are the results of redactors who either wrote these things down or they edited what had been written down and embellished it with other details after the fact. That, of course, is not what the church teaches. So that's a theory that it's held in some circles. I don't hold that theory. And the church has said before that these are indeed authentic books and they were written by those that we know that they were written by. And when I say we know that they were written by, take Matthew's gospel, for example. It's an anonymous document. It doesn't tell us who wrote it, but the church has, as part of her patrimony, the consistent testimony from the earliest days that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John did write these gospels, even though the gospel itself doesn't tell us that. So between the scriptural manuscript evidence and the patristic testimony, we have, I think, very strong ground to stand on to say that theories like the one you just mentioned are not true. Now, there's so much more to say about this. Dr. Scott Hahn has a book called Politicizing the Bible, and that might be a book for you to read if you're interested in why it is that some people say things like what you were told, and he gives a remedy to that kind of thing. I wish I had more time, Michael, but thanks for the call. When we come back, I'm going to share with you, what does the Bible say about praying for the dead and purgatory? I'll get to that right after this.